Dr. K of Dr. KY's Whitehead. Thank you for joining us for more discussion. I want us to talk about this white supremacy piece. I think that that is part of the problem in this country. I think that people don't really understand the impact of white supremacy, that some people kind of see when I talk about white supremacy, it's like, oh, well, you just don't like the system, or, oh, it's you against the man, or, oh, no. White supremacy is a structure that is designed to oppress us. White supremacy is real. And I know that I talk about the same thing over and over and over again. I guess I believe like Miriam Cobber. Miriam Cobber, whose new book, We Do This Till We Free Us, is about prison abolition. In my last conversation with attorney Kobe Flowers, I went and I pulled my Angela Davis book, Prisons Are Obsolete, back off the shelf. I said, I need to go back and reread it. I went and pulled off my Ruthie Gilmore work, pulled it back off the shelf so I can go back and reread it. I went and pulled up my book on Assata Shakur. I said, you know, I just need to spend some time going back so I can really solidify my position as I've changed, right? I moved from let's find a way to reform the police. That's how I started. I was like, you know, we need to reform the police. Then I moved to defund the police. I said, you know what? We have militarized the police. We're giving the police in some cities like Baltimore four times as much money as we're giving education, and our babies can't read. Okay, let's defund the police. And now I'm in to abolish the police. Like, I'm now saying what Miriam Cobber said. We do this till we free us. That we've got to rethink this whole process, because the path that we're going on now, as we continue to pour our money into the militarized police, is only helping to further fund the structure that is designed to oppress us, to imprison us, and to ultimately kill us if that is what it takes. We're having this conversation. I want to invite you into this conversation, 410-319-8888. Before I go to my guest, I know Kanika was holding. Let me get Kanika, then I'll go straight to my guest who I'm really excited about speaking with. Kanika, how are you? Thank you for calling.
I'm great, Dr. K. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. K, I love the conversation that's going on today about the children and also other facts or ways that people have their opinions and thinking. But I was thinking about Ben Carson's book, At Hand, and how Ben Carson's mom begins to tell her children what to do in order to make themselves think more and become educated more. Yeah. And just thinking about when he started doing, when they started doing that, putting more time into themselves and the award that he was getting, and that one teacher or faculty member stood on that stage and told them how Ben Carson wasn't smarter than them because he didn't have a father at home.
Right.
But they didn't understand what the mom was doing for Ben Carson. But Dr. K, it was this awesome piece that one of your itty-bitty fan club members, my daughter, Dear Kess, was a part of this weekend. And it was the youth panel that the Black Writers Guild gave for the youth. And this was their seventh annual panel.
Mm-hmm.
If people understand that these things are out here for these children to do, it was amazing, if I tell you not. My daughter was 12, but she fit in the arena with those children who are writing, who are writing skits, who are writing their own books, who are just taking their time to put their energy into other things and other areas to make them think a little more. They were just talented. And we in Baltimore and those who are new to Baltimore need to really get out here and learn what these kids and these moms are doing when it comes to resources.
I love that. Thank you so much, Kanika. I appreciate that. I'm joined now, and I'm just thinking as we're getting everything together to kind of help us to understand, I reached out to attorney Kobe Flowers. He joined us last week just to help us to understand where we are. Mr. Flowers, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Dr. K, it's always a pleasure to work with you and learn from you. And so thank you for having me.
Well, now, I will say, folks, after I spoke to Attorney Flowers last week, who's a trial lawyer with over 20 years of courtroom experience, he's litigated cases in federal and state courts throughout the United States and internationally in the military commissions in Guantanamo Bay. I went, Kobe, and I pulled off, Angela, I put it all back off the shelf.
So that we can.
I was like, I need to go back and I need to rethink my position around abolish the police. We're now in week two of the Derek Chauvin trial.
Yes.
And what we're watching, I think, is unprecedented. I think, and I'd love to hear what the real opinion here, because I'm watching police officers speak out against the blue line and saying, you know, what he was doing, he was not supposed to do.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that, and then what does that portend for how the trial is going to go forward?
Okay, well, I want to say one thing that is very, very important as we analyze this is that my very first job out of law school was prosecuting police officers.
Right.
And so I know exactly how these cases have to be put together to win. And I, as you know, Dr. K, am now a prison abolitionist because I know with all of the police officers that I put in a cage, didn't stop Freddie Gray, didn't stop Michael Brown, and the long list, didn't stop what happened to Breonna Taylor, and the long list of people who suffered at the hands of police officers, black and brown, poor people who suffered at the hands of police officers, and yet I was part of kind of the criminal legal system that put them in cages and know that by putting them in cages, it didn't stop the police brutality. And that's what I want to do is stop police brutality. I don't want to make it better. I don't want to kind of feed into what so many of us, because we're hurting, so many of us want to see kind of this retributive justice and putting somebody in a cage and say, there you go, you know, we won. But I know having put people in cages, we still don't win. So I want to kind of feed off your really good point, Dr. K, which is this. Having prosecuted police officers, I know you don't win those cases unless you see what's going on in the Derek Chauvin trial today, which is people crossing the blue wall of silence to point the finger at Derek Chauvin. You do not win a case, and I want to repeat that, unless you have that. And that's one reason why these cases are so difficult to bring. But so that has happened before. I have been a part of that happening, that is having police officers testify against their own. Let me tell you what I have never seen happen before and why this Derek Chauvin case really is unprecedented, to use your word, Dr. K. You have the Minneapolis police chief.
Right.
Take the stand and say that one of his own violated the law, at least violated training. When Madaria Arredondo took the stand to say that Derek Chauvin, one of his own, violated policy, that, Dr. K, I cannot tell you, and I've literally been involved in hundreds of police cases where you have the police chief, sitting police chief, take the stand and say, one of my own violated policy. That does not happen. So when you ask me, what does it portend? Well, trials are trials. And they're always, you know, we haven't heard what the defense has to say. Okay.
Right.
But I can tell you, it is unprecedented. You just do not have that. And maybe there's a case out there that I just don't know about. I always, you know, kind of leave the door at least a little bit open. But I've studied these cases for over 20 years. I've prosecuted these cases. And you have a police chief. You know, can you imagine here in Baltimore?
Come on.
The police chief taking the stand against the Freddie Gray officers? You weren't even on the witness list. Because it typically does not happen. And that is happening here. Everybody needs to take note. I want to also kind of wrap up my comments by saying what you said about, and what I've said and what folks far more talented, like Marion Taba, Angela Davis going all the way back, you know, Ruthie Gilmore, Professor Gilmore, going all the way back. These prison abolitionists, you know, these women, well, not only prison abolitionists, but they're also black feminists. That's not lost on me as a black male. But these women have been talking about abolition for decades. You know why? And I want to go back to what happened with the police chief when he testified, yesterday and a little bit today. Dr. K, he talked about spending $13 million on training.
Come on.
Derek Chauvin and those officers. And he spent all of that money, and yet we have George Floyd's death. So for people who sit here and say, well, we got to do more training, we got to give more money to these police departments. I'm here to tell you, you can do all the training, you can give all the money, right? But you're not going to stop police brutality in a way that matters. I'm here to tell you, follow what Miriam Kaba says, follow what Angela Davis says, follow what Professor Ruthie Gilmore says, and take that $13 million that was used on training to Derek Chauvin, put it in the school. I go back to what Kanika was saying, you know, where her daughter can go to a program in Baltimore and learn and really reach her potential, because there are now resources, because we're not spending the money on such that every Baltimore police officer has the latest SUV.
Come on.
What about every Baltimore kid, like Kanika's daughter, has the latest laptop, has the latest science lab,
has, game changers,
you know, the latest, you know, art tools, the latest, you know, and just like, you know, with police departments, right, every single year the police department budget goes up and up, right? They get the latest and the greatest whatever. What if it was like that for school?
Nope,
what if it was like that for healthcare? You know, so those are my thoughts on what has just happened in the Derek Chauvin trial and why it's such a big deal. I will just wrap up by saying one last thing. Derek Chauvin's own training director, Katie Blackwell, took the stand and testified against Derek Chauvin.
Yes.
She made Derek Chauvin a training director herself. So in other words, Derek Chauvin was considered one of the best.
Yes, he knew exactly what he was doing.
Police department. Okay? And then he goes ahead and kills George Floyd. And again, everybody says, we got to have more training. Well, look, this guy was trained.
He was a trainer.
He was one of the best. He was a trainer. Thank you, Dr. Jett. Yeah. And look what happened. So I'm. That's why I go back to, you know, again, with my black feminists, I always try to follow them. And as a feminist myself, I try to follow and learn. And again, what Miriam Kaba says in her book, which you talked about, we do this till we free us.
Yeah, till we free.
Yeah, till we free.
And then you're talking both, you know, physically free, y'all, and she's talking about emotionally, mentally, and psychologically free. She covers all of that in the book. Now, before we go to the calls, we have Bryant, Wesley, and Roro standing by. Kobe, I want to tap into just for a moment the fact that you were a civil rights prosecutor at the United States Department of Justice for over 4 years. I want to tap into that background just for a minute and get your sense of what's happening in Georgia. Because when I talked about it on the show yesterday, Kobe, got a lot of pushback. Oh, it's in Georgia. That's not us. Focus on what's happening. I said, look, y'all, you know, it's Jim and Jane Crow. It's what apartheid is looking like. So can you talk about why what is happening in Georgia and lawmakers now in 47 states, why should anyone who is concerned about democracy standing still and moving forward at the same time, who should be watching what has happened? Why is this an issue that is designed to take away our access to the ballot?
Well, I'll answer that question by saying this. There are lawyers far more talented than me who've been doing this longer and better than me, who are civil rights lawyers, who would say, Dr. K, that of all the rights that we have in the Constitution, the right to vote is the most important right. And so when that right starts to get stripped away and diluted, as it is in Georgia, then it concerns us all. It's not a Georgia problem. It's our problem. I will follow this up by saying, look, what's happening in Georgia is because of the case Shelby County versus Holder back in 2013, in which the Supreme Court, in a narrow 5-4 vote, said, hey, Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, that was that act that was passed in 1965 after the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And Section 4 meant that states like Georgia, whenever they would pass voting laws, they would have to be pre-cleared by the Justice Department. Okay? They'd have to be, in other words, the Justice Department would look at the law and look at the effect of the law, and both the actual and kind of like perceived effect, and figure out, you know what, whether we're going to allow this law to come into effect. Now, because of the Supreme Court case against Shelby County versus Holder back in 2013, they no longer have to go through preclearance. And so that's why what's happening in Georgia. I think the Brennan Center put out a report not too long ago saying that, you know, this has happened. There are over 200-some laws, 250 bills, rather, in states all across this country trying to limit voting. Again, that's just a new thing that's happening because we have two things. One, we had this last election, and there was this, you know, the big lie, as we've all heard.
Right.
And then number two, the Justice Department no longer can go into these states and say, no, we're not going to have a law like they have in Georgia, which, you know, is essentially takes the determination of whether a vote is legitimate or not, takes it out of state control and takes it out of local control, puts it in control of the Republican-controlled legislature, essentially. That's what happens. And again, that Republican-controlled legislature can now go into, like, Fulton County in Atlanta and say, hey, these votes were all fraudulent, right? It's no longer, again, kind of like a Secretary of State who's a little bit, you know, Georgia's tricky. But the point is this, is that the Republicans really have control of whose votes count and whose votes don't. Back in the day when Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act was in full force, they could not do that. Now they can, and it's not just happening in Georgia. It's going to happen. It is happening all over the country.
Well, let me open up the phones for some calls, Kobe. I'm so glad that you're with us. And I know we have quite a few people, and I'll go in order. Bryant, Wesley, Roro, and then Charles. Brian is a new caller. Thank you for joining us, Bryant.
How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well,
thank
you.
I finally got through. I want to piggyback not what he's talking about. That's very important what he's talking about, but the fathers in the home. I'm glad you put that fact down, and it's so very true that what you said is like when our people, we regurgitate what other people say, and it's not true. You know, I'll tell you a real quick story real quick. I know you have to go.
Mm-hmm.
I have a buddy that I work with, and a couple years, a white guy, and his father died. So they called him on the intercom, and they called him to the office, and he came back, and he told everybody, I said, my father died. I said, well, we sorry to hear that. Why don't you go home, man? We got this. He said, no, forget him. He left my father. He left my mother when I was five, my brother was four. He said, contrary to belief, there are a lot of us. He said, they'll tell you all that. And I'm so glad that you put that out there, because it hurts my heart when I hear that, because I'm a father. I take care of my kids.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, they tell us lies. There's lies all the time. So I thank you. And anytime you need donations, I'm willing to give.
Thank you so much, Brian. I appreciate you. Let's go to Wesley from Reisterstown. Wesley, how are you?
Okay, I've got some housekeeping I got to do first. I have your address, but I don't know who to make my check out to.
Okay. Justina will make sure that you get that. Justina said, don't hang up. We will help you with that today. Thank you so much.
Statement here. About a lady that I have a lot of respect for, still have respect for, Frances Cress Welsing.
Yes.
And she, you can probably explain to the audience better than I can who she was. And she had an associate by the name of, I think his name was Dory or Corey, but his last name was Ford, I remember that.
Yeah.
And his statement was, if you do not understand racism, white supremacy, then you cannot, I'm paraphrasing, you might know the exact statement. If you don't understand racism, white supremacy, you cannot understand this country or the world itself. So that's my only statement. So if Justina can get back to me, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Hold on 1 second. So, Kobe, let me come back to you before I go to Roro, Dwayne, and Charles. Can you talk a little bit about the dismantling of white supremacy? And I had Adam Jackson on earlier from LBS, and I'm trying to make it clear to people that white supremacy has to be dismantled. It's not some nebulous concept that we can't wrap our hands around. What does that look like from your perspective, Kobe?
Well, I think from my kind of perspective in the criminal legal system, the first thing that we do to the key thing, the vision has to be to abolish the prison system as we know it, because the prison system is a direct, it's directly from slavery, right? It is not lost to me, and I explained this a little bit last week, right? That what was the very first kind of reform of the police department? Well, it was the 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act, right? Because when we were freed, you know, after 1865 and there was the passing of the Reconstruction Amendments to kind of deal with in slavery and the fact that we had no rights as black folks, Congress passed the 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act because the Ku Klux Klan was the police department, because the Ku Klux Klan was the police department were the old slave catchers, right? And so it's not lost on me that when you go into prisons, as I have done all over this great but flawed country, and the feeling that I have, Dr. K, when I look in those cages and see people looking out who look just like me, is the same feeling I have when I went back to West Africa, you know, to the slave castles in Elmina, in Ghana, and then Gore up in Senegal. Mm-hmm. And you walk through those slave castles, and as a black man, it's the same feeling I have when I walk through these prisons, okay? And so when you ask me, hey, how do we dismantle white supremacy? One very clear way is you have to dismantle slavery, and what I'll call our prison industrial complex is a vestige, you know, it comes out of slavery. And again, that's why it's not lost on me that, you know, the very first act for police reform was the 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act. And it's also, I think, also not lost on me that, look, so it's been, you know, 200 years almost that we've been reforming police, and we still have the George Floyd situation. So when you ask me, hey, how do we dismantle white supremacy? We get rid of prisons and we replace, not just get rid of, right? You know, Marin Kaba and Angela Davis talk in terms of, hey, well, people are going to go out and hurt other folks, right? So we've got to, instead of putting somebody in a cage, what does restorative justice look like? And there are a lot of solutions exactly for restorative justice and saying, you know, look, if you go out, rape, steal, and kill, you know, society can't just say, hey, you know, you go off and do your own thing. No, we've got to deal with the racist, the thief and the killer, okay? But putting that person in a cage and not recognizing that we are our brother's keeper. Nobody is born a rapist, right? Stuff happens along the way. And having represented rapists, having represented serial killers, I can tell you to a person, each, and they were all men, when you look at the despicable lives that they had to live, okay, you start to understand why they did what they did. Doesn't make it right, and a lot of people live despicable lives and don't engage in those types of antisocial behavior, right? But on some level, when you say, oh, my gosh, you know, there are tens of millions of dollars going to the police department and nothing going to the schools, and you wonder why a kid who doesn't have an education feels nihilistic and goes out and does something which is not very, very smart, doesn't have parents in the house, doesn't have, you know, any type of structure because there's no resources, we all can't sit around here and say that we're surprised, right? So again, when you ask me how do we start to dismantle white supremacy, one very real way, and again, I'm just stealing from people smarter than myself, is to go ahead and abolish these prisons in the way that, you know, Angela Davis has said and Professor Ruthie Gilmore.
All right, Attorney Kobe Flowers, we look forward to checking in with you next week as we continue to unpack all of this. Thank you so much, sir, for your time again.
Thank you so much for all that you do, Dr. K. Keep on keeping on.
Thank you, sir. So, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Roro, Al, Charles, Dwayne, and there's still a line for you, so let's keep talking about it. Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Earlier, someone mentioned Dr. Frances Cress-Welsing. I think we need to just take a moment here for people who may not be familiar with her work. Dr. Frances Cress-Welsing, and people call here and they talk about her a lot, but she was a psychiatrist who talked about white supremacist culture, one of the earliest folks to talk about it. One of her key books is the ISIS Papers, The Keys to Colors. And that if you go and take a look at her work, she talks about dismantling dismantling white supremacy. Like, the if we put our focus on building up, for example, black men who have the greatest ability to actually annihilate genetic mutilation, she talks about why it's important to uproot racism, to dismantle white supremacy. And the quote that the caller was talking about earlier is from Neely Fuller Jr. If you don't understand white supremacy, racism, what it is and how it works, everything else that you understand will only confuse you. That's what Neely Fuller Jr., who was often featured alongside Dr. Francis Cress Wellesley. If you don't understand white supremacy, y'all, if you don't understand racism, if you don't understand what it is, if you don't understand why it works, if you don't understand how it works, then everything else you understand will only confuse you. This system is built on white supremacy. And if you don't get that, it's going to be hard to say, well, why should we abolish the police? And why should we be concerned about voting in Georgia? And I haven't even voted my whole life. I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about all these celebrities. I'm like LeBron James. I just voted for the first time. I don't vote at all. It's no big deal. If you don't understand white supremacy and racism, if you don't understand what it is, how it came to be, how it works, everything else you understand will confuse you. Because you see it in silos. And America doesn't work in silos. Like, it's not just education and just our community and just policing and just what happened. No. America doesn't work like that. America works in boxes. It's all organized together. It's a foundation. It's a root. And it comes up and springs and spills over into every aspect of our life. Let's go to Roro, then Charles, then Dwayne, then Al. Roro, how are you? Thank you for holding.
Hey, Dr. K. Thank you for holding.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. All right, so Dr. K, yeah, I hear where you're coming from. I've been to the slave dungeons in Almena,
yeah,
in Ghana, and it's a terrible sight to see. You could still feel the screaming, the blood on the walls, everything. So, but I called in to just take this moment to just say thank you. Thank you for all that you're doing for us. You know, you stay up late at night and all of that. You be really working on some things to help our people. And I just wanted to call in and say we really appreciate you for doing that.
Thank you so much, Roro. I appreciate it. I really needed to hear that today. Thank you so much. Folks, we do. My team and I, look, we take this call very seriously. Some people see it as just a job. We see it as a ministry. It's about trying to get the education out and about educating ourselves as well. We are teaching and learning alongside you. We have Charles on the phone from Ellicott City. Charles, how are you?
I'm great, ma'am. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Good, good. The way I fight white supremacy is black consciousness. Black success and open consciousness. Unfortunately, we can't have this success without consciousness, because those who are successful, or what we claim to be success, if they're not going to openly share their consciousness to tell others it's okay to be unapologetically black,
right,
then we still hold on to secrets that could free us and that could help us be successful. I do believe that there's a certain element that is against us, but we can't hold on to that and let that hold us back. Because part of it now is just the psychology of saying that you're still chained to that tree, as in Pavlov's dog.
Right.
You know, a lot of us think we're still chained to the tree. We are, but most of that chain now is of the mind, and we got to strike that. We got to be real careful. And again, we speak to this current case that we're seeing in the news right now. We've seen this before. We've seen this with Rodney King and Eric Garner and countless others. It was on videotape before.
Right.
So we can't act like this is new. We can't act like there's something different here. You know, we've all seen it before. And then on the back end, it didn't come out the way that we thought it should come out. So let's not act as if we haven't seen this movie before, because we have. So what we have to do is be conscious about what we're seeing and continue to fight to change it. It doesn't mean riding in the streets. It doesn't mean burning and looting buildings. But it does mean being openly conscious and openly conscientious towards each other to make sure we share how success happens for one another. And when things like the laws that are being passed around the country are put in place to try and keep us from participating, that's even more reason to participate. If it wasn't a big deal, they wouldn't put them in place to keep us out. We need to recognize that. Keep doing what you do. We appreciate you.
I think I really appreciate you saying that. And with touching on Pavlov's dog, I think we got to talk about Pavlov's dog, folks. And what does it mean to deal with Pavlovian conditioning? Okay, so for those of you who may be familiar, it was a Russian physiologist, Ivan Pavlov, and he, back in the 1890s, he set up this test to study the amount of saliva that dogs make, right? So this notion of you ring a bell, you give the dog a treat. And that dogs, when they think a treat's coming, I mean, if you have a dog, I'm a dog owner. I got Bella, 138-pound English Mastiff. If I go in the refrigerator, she starts salivating. And just going in the refrigerator. It doesn't matter if I'm getting water, ice. It doesn't matter. The refrigerator to her indicates snacks. Why? Because I keep her snacks on top of the refrigerator. So she doesn't know if I'm in the refrigerator on top, but she knows if I go to the refrigerator, more often than not, I'm bringing a snack back, right? So if I walk in that direction, she starts to salivate. Pavlovian conditioning is saying what I've done is I have done what's called classic conditioning. I have conditioned Bella to respond when I go to the refrigerator. She starts to salivate. Can't help herself. A treat's coming. And when there's no treat, I mean, you know, if dogs can look sad, she looks sad. There's also a different thing called operant conditioning. And that's based upon the willful actions of the subject. But the classical conditioning, people argue that if you grow up in an oppressed society, you're being conditioned in how to respond. So something happened and you get the same response each time and you become used to that response. You expect that response and you don't think anything else is going to happen. We are used to the kind of behavior that we're getting from the police. So we've normalized it, right? So we're expecting police to show up and yell something and we all dash off in different directions. We expect that because that's classical conditioning. White supremacy is rooted heavily in classical conditioning, conditioning us to believe that we are less than. Therefore, when we are treated that way, we don't expect anything different. Well, they put their knee on our neck and they killed us. Wow, how hard is that? You know what? It can't be that hard because they've been putting their knee on our necks killing us for a long time. They really have. I mean, the only difference is now it's being videotaped. It was happening before. And a lot of times, it was hard to convince people it was happening. It was like, it was hard to say, look, y'all, this is real. Like, this is actually happening. We seized on Black Lives Matter. And I'm like, we've been saying Black Lives Matter, and people have been making tons of money off Black Lives Matter, but we haven't convinced anyone that Black lives do matter. I've asked a question, people have gotten upset with me. Do Black lives matter to Black people? Have we been conditioned, like Pavlov's dog, have we been conditioned to believe that our lives don't matter? Because you got to explain to me why 16-year-olds are shooting and killing people. You got to explain to me why teenagers are attacking adults, grown people at 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning who are on their way to work. You got to explain to me how people in our community can sell drugs to our people in our community. You got to explain to me how our people steal cars from each other. You just got to let me know, because have we been conditioned? Classical conditioning, Pavlovian conditioning, to believe that our lives don't matter. Therefore, we act in that way. 410-319-8888. Dwayne's on the phone from Columbia. Dwayne, how are you?
Hello. I just want to speak briefly about the point you made about what's taking place in Georgia. I'm going to say this. What we as Black people have to understand is the noose is on white supremacy's neck. We are beginning to tighten that noose. Mm-hmm. One way we can kill white supremacy is through legislation. Allow me to make this point, please. What's taking place in Georgia, the state, is white supremacy is beginning to understand that black people now are not just woke. We are conditioned and reconditioning our position in policy and in politics. That's the death of white supremacy. And what you have to do to your enemy, it's not just to kill your enemy. You have to make sure you kill your enemy down to the last chromosome on a microscopic level. It's not one to just kill a person. You have to make sure his cells are not regenerating. And the way we do that is voting. Now, you made a lot of good points, and I'm going to make this point. We as black people have to understand that once we become woke, there is no going back to sleep. And that's the fear of white supremacy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. We have Al on the phone, then I'll go to Mother Justice. Al, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Did you graduate from McKinley Tech?
Yeah, I did.
I'm class of 75.
Hey, McKinley Tech's always
about that
in the house.
My alumni. Look, I'm familiar with, I'm trying to make sure it's possible, I'm familiar with Nene Fuller. I listened to him on another radio station, and he's very astute. Wonderful guy. I'm familiar with Dr. Francis. I'm familiar with her works, too. But the brother, Charles, two calls ago, he put it point blank, right to the point. I couldn't have said it any better. White supremacy, to me, is in place and has been in place since they brought our ancestors here, and it's been orchestrated to the point where it will always exist. Rockefeller and another one of his cronies orchestrated or put together a plan for black people some years ago, back in the 1800s, that will keep us orchestrated in a mental set, you know, for condition for the rest of our lives. But white supremacy is not going anywhere. I don't care how many different ways y'all say or other people say that we have to do this, that, and the other to dismantle it. It's not going to happen. They are consistently doing stuff to keep white supremacy in place. And that's my point.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Al.
I'm just
throwing it out here. So if that is where we are, if that is indeed the case, then how do we then get free? I mean, we got to think beyond this moment, right? So if we have indeed been conditioned to believe that we don't matter, our lives don't matter, if we have been conditioned to believe that our story doesn't matter, our voice doesn't matter. Because if we don't believe our voice matters, if we don't believe our lives matter, if we don't believe our children matter, then we will not believe that our vote matters. See, it's all connected. It's not silos, folks. That conditioning, I'm so glad that caller put that down. Classical conditioning, Pavlovian conditioning. Bell rings, dog thinks food's coming, starts to salivate. The lies told that we don't matter, at some point along the way, between 1619 till today, we've believed it. You keep telling the same lie over and over and over and over and over and over again, at some point, the lie becomes situated as the truth. We've been told since 1619 we were less than. Since 1619, we have been told over and over and over and over again that we were less than, that we didn't matter, that we were not needed, we were not necessary, we were not talented, we were not brilliant, we were not bold, we were not beautiful. Since 1619. Are you surprised that at some point people started believing it? Not just black folks, right? White folks, folks coming over from the continent, Asian American folks, Hispanic folks, indigenous folks, like everybody been hearing the lie about black folks. And at some point, people have been believing the lie. 410-319-8888. I'm going to Mother Justice next, then Mark, then Lev. Mother Justice, how are you?
Good evening, Ms. Dr. K.
Hey.
45, okay? You are 45 minutes away from me in Baltimore, and I guarantee you we are well needed because our children don't need to be orphans anymore. We don't need to be individualized and divided anymore. That went through slavery. That's why 1619 was the way it was.
Right.
And as far as the knee and the neck, the head bashed against the ground, the concrete, and the hip being bashed because now you are one of the stronger entities. You understand? 1919 is 2019. 1919 is 2001. 19, 20 years later, since the Twin Towers, this is when we started waking up about what's going on here in America. Detail is so intricate, I can't even get into it. But if you take my number down, you and I can have some real feedback to give back to the audience. I will tell you this much. Belmont, Ohio is full of crap. Their law and judicial system is off the wall, okay? They ain't on the wall. They're not like Moses, like Genesis, okay? Mm. And they definitely not like Mother Justice. So when you get the opportunity, while you on air, some things won't be discussed on air.
Right.
You heard.
Right.
I will leave my number for you.
Yes, I'm going to have you. Hold on one second. Let's get Mother Justice's number. Hold on, Mother Justice. I appreciate you. Let's go to Mark, and then I have Mark, Lev, William, and Kevin. Hey, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Hey, you know, you were saying, where do we start? I'll tell you, in my opinion, you start over in England. Because that's where a lot of this came from. Well, all of it came from is there. I mean, it started with this royalism. My family is better than yours. Then you come to the United States, all these white families on equal footing. So who are we going to lord over? We're going to lord over the Asians, the Mexicans, and Africans. And they will tell you their family is the greatest, but they will, in the same breath, decimate your family. Mm-hmm. And their weapon of choice, I hate to say it, is the Bible. Catholic Church has gone through that Bible, man, you know, and I'm not saying that the Bible is wrong. What I'm saying is that there are certain passages in the Bible that just doesn't make any sense to me. And I ask myself, why do you people believe in this and it's not even in the book?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this past holiday, Easter. Easter's not in the Bible. You know, the word is mentioned in the book of Job, but that was a pagan holiday, Ishtar, but we celebrate it. Mm-hmm. That's how deep this brainwashing is going. And we're going to have to break it down to formula, and formula starts with the word F, which is family. Everybody in this country speaks English. Why? Because this was an English colony, and it was designed to be that. And the only way, this is not the United States anymore. You can see local governors, and every state is doing what they want to do. There's nothing united here. So we're going to have to really sit back and look at it from formula and say, okay, how can we start to root this evil, which is white supremacy? And it comes from the British Crown. People will sit there and gawk over, you know, the couple, Meghan and her husband, but they won't even look in their own family, you know, and they'll tell you about the Queen. Come on, man. I mean,
okay. Well, I got to stop you there, Mark. I really appreciate you just kind of laying this down and connecting this all the way back to England for us. We have Lev, William, and Kevin next. How are you, Lev?
Hi, Dr. Kay. And also, thank you so much for the brilliance that you bring to Baltimore and being the voice of the community. I just wanted to say that this is a very inspiring conversation. And how do we overcome, or how do we debunk, or how do we destroy white supremacists? Well, I appreciate the caller that was just on the phone, because we have been indoctrinated with the white man's mentality from the beginning, from when we were brought from Africa over here. We were inundated with the Christianity, which is not who we are. So we do have to start debunking so many different mindsets that has been implanted in us for generations. Mm. Christianity is one. The legal system is another. You know, when we actually had an opportunity to teach ourselves, where we had our own schools and we had our black teachers teaching our black students, we've got to go back to that. We can't depend on the system to do right by our black children. And if we do, then that's a false hope. We've got to remove our children from the system and make sure that they're planted in our community so that we can not only protect them, but educate them, train them. The word of God says, train up a child in the way they should go, so that when they're old, they shall not depart from it.
Right.
But we're not doing the training according to the word of God. They're in other communities. School system is another community. It's not our black community. So we need to start building our black community again, encircling our families and empowering our children by ourselves. If we don't do it, no one else will.
Thank you so much, Lev. I appreciate that. We have William on the phone. Then we'll go to Kevin. William, how are you?
Good afternoon, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I want to start by saying to all of the original people and those who call themselves civilized, Happy New Year. You know New Year was April the 1st, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's go with that. So let's pump the brakes, and I'm going to pull a page from the children now, K through 4th grade, before the motivation for Dr. Jawanza Kajufu to write his book. So we're going to do K through 4. First, let's just put white supremacy off the table right now. Let's start dealing with everything like children from K to 4. When that one child ain't playing right, you know what I'm talking about, Dr. K, and they give them the silent treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And that treatment changes that behavior before you get out of lunch. Now, I've said this before. This is a suggestion. I've got to, you know, I take suggestions and I give them when I can. We need to pursue things that Congress can't legislate. Liberation, like the sovereign people of France did in 1944 when they won their way, and humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Congress can't legislate a triangle having three sides, nor can Congress legislate the pursuit, like Capleton said on his mm-hmm. More Fire album, if you don't seek, you ain't going to find.
Right.
They can't legislate us searching for what was erased. So, like a couple of your callers made mention about the crown and how the hidden societies and all of those things, which are real. I ain't trying to go into that. But
right.
When you look at the House, when the Congress and the Senate get together to speak, and I said this on Brother Faraji's show, and you look at the House where Pelosi speaks, behind her is the American flag, and to the right and the left of the American flag are the two fasci, the stick and bundles with the axe. Now, not to go too far back, because I don't want to lose anybody, but that's coming straight out of Rome. Britannia was a colony of Rome.
Right.
Let's put off white supremacy and our later for that. We ain't got to worry about no white supremacy. And here's a question to you, Dr. K. Where is the black Elon Musk?
Mm.
Where is the black Mrs. Banneker? Because I'm trying to balance it out here, if you can see where I'm going.
Right.
Where are the black children with new ideas and innovations? And instead of having your child out on a median strip in Baltimore City cleaning a window for a car that comes with fluid and wipers, have that kid get back into the house, link up with his friends, and have them study to go back to school to create a stain-resistant windshield. Get with two young ladies who have engineering ideas and have them create a car where they can install that windshield. Dr. K, you have a good day, because
okay,
I'm actually on the
clock. Thank you so much, William. We have, I know we have a lot going on. We have Kevin and we have Robert. Kevin, how are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
All right. I'm just kind of curious, you know. I understand your point, but I'm trying to understand, who are you trying to reach out to? Is the older generation or the younger generation? Because when you start talking about white supremacy, the young generation doesn't see the same thing that you see and I see, or what we went through. They're not really going through that like you say they are. I mean, the police brutality and all that stuff, yes, they had that back then, but we was kind of more respectful to the police than they are now. I mean, these kids now are a little bit more weaponized than we were back in the day. A whole lot more respectful we were back in the day than these kids are now. And it's a big mixture. It's a melting pot. Now it's more people in the United States. And the white supremacy thing, it's okay. I kind of understand where you're coming from, but I think it's a little bit too late for that.
Okay.
Because I think the white folks have gotten the notion that there's no need to keep listening to black people complain about what's this, that, and the other. They're just replacing us.
Mm.
I mean, why do you think the border is open now? I mean, if you want to think of white supremacy, let's start off with the presidents that we get. You know, let's start off with the leaderships in the community, like the mayor. We got black mayors, but all the jobs in the city is city jobs and contracts are given to Hispanics. So I think they really tired of us talking about white supremacy this, white supremacy that. It's getting old now, you know, and it's time to, like, try to figure out how we going to get black people to start, like, working together and building things together instead of keep going back in the past and trying to figure out what happened. It's too late now.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop you there. Thank you so much. Do I have time for one more phone call? Robert, you got a last comment, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I had some things to say, but then I just want to say God bless everybody, and be safe out there.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, folks. Tomorrow, for our weekly wrap, we have something very special. I just want to let you know, we are announcing the name of the book for our book club, and we've got a special tip for you. I am so excited about tomorrow. Come prepared to talk about who we are and how we can go forward. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve you in this way. Keep it here before the culture with Faraji Muhammad, who's going to be talking to our mayor, Brandon Scott.